May it please the court. My name is James Frank. I'm from the firm of Epstein, Becker & Green, and I represent the New York and Presbyterian Hospital. I'm here today to ask the court to reverse the decision of the National Labor Relations Board that was entered in this case, both on substantive grounds and on procedural grounds. On the substantive issues, the record shows that the hospital did in fact provide the evidence or information that the union sought about its employees. There's record testimony from Ms. Murphy that the hospital told her about the shifts worked. And that's on page 279 to 281 of the record. And the board just was wrong when it said the hospital wasn't contesting that issue or that it hadn't provided the information. The second problem was that the board expanded the remedy. It said that the hospital should provide unlimited information that the ALJ had not analyzed about the university's employment of nurse practitioners without going through any analysis. And we think that was also serious error. And the third substantive problem was in regard to the university employees. The arbitrator did rule. I mean, the board members said he hadn't. But if one looks at page 264 of the record, the administrative law judge clearly said that the arbitrator had ruled that they did not need the information. I think the essential issue on the university employees was that they're not hospital employees. I don't think there's any dispute about that. What the union said at the arbitration case was that they wanted to not have the university employees working in the hospital. Under established law.
Well, their grievance was about nurse practitioners employed by or hired by, I can't remember which word they used, but so these nurse practitioners are not hospital employees. They're not employed by, they're not hired by. But our president says we don't have to go by the specific grievance if it's probable that it's going to be relevant or. But my question is, I want to understand, it seems to me that the nurse practitioners who are employed by Columbia are not doing bargaining unit work. You've got in your brief that they're not that the hospital itself doesn't supervise, pay, or affect the employment terms of the Columbia nurse practitioners. And you also cite to the record that while the Columbia nurse practitioners are under the supervision of doctors, the hospital nurse practitioners are under the supervision of hospital nurse administrators and patient care directors, which I take it are not physicians.
That is correct.
So is it true that these nurse practitioners in Columbia, I mean, that are retired, that are retained by Columbia, paid by Columbia, are not doing bargaining unit work in that they're not supervised by these hospital patient care directors? They're supervised by the physicians who are themselves employed by Columbia. I'm just trying to get an idea.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Is that true?
Yes. The hospital does not employ physicians. They're employed by the university and the medical center. The university's physicians hire nurse practitioners to assist them. The hospital has its own employees, and there are the people who are represented by the union. And the recognition clause of the collective bargaining agreement specifically limits the union's recognition to nurses employed by the hospital. And it has never included any of the Columbia people who have always worked for Columbia in the facilities.
But here's my problem is if the Columbia nurse practitioners are doing something different in the same hospital that the hospital nurse practitioners are doing, then it seems to me the union needs to see at least what they've been authorized by the physicians to do. And if it is the same as bargaining unit work, then there's a problem with that side letter.
Two issues. One, the administrative law judge effectively changed the grievance. The grievance that the union filed said that the hospital had hired people not included in the bargaining unit. And there are some nurses hired by the hospital outside of the bargaining unit because they voted not to be included. That was the issue that was in front of the arbitrator. The issue in front of the arbitrator was whether or not the hospital had hired people not included in the bargaining unit.
Right.
The administrative law judge recast that grievance. He said that they were really seeking, in effect, a subcontracting case, that the hospital was using university people to do bargaining unit work.
Right.
And that's not what they alleged. Nor did they ever give evidence to the hospital of why they needed that information.
Well, but if we're not bound by the specific grievance, that is, the complaint was that the hospital was hiring nurse practitioners that were not part of the bargaining unit and they were doing bargaining unit work. That's the specific grievance. But if if we're at the discovery stage trying to figure out if the union should get these documents, if the union, in order to establish its grievance, has to know what these new practitioners, whoever they're employed by, if they're working at that same hospital, if they're doing bargaining unit work, that's what their complaint is.
I understand their complaint, but that issue was actually not relevant to what they were grieving. The hospital conceded that the employees of Columbia University were providing patient care services as physician extenders or assistants to the physicians. That was never disputed. And the union was not saying otherwise. So who these people were and what their names were is not relevant. What the board has tried to do is conflate credentialing documents. Are you entitled to practice within certain professional areas with a job description? All that the hospital has is the basic credentialing documents, where there's an agreement between the nurse practitioner and a physician about what they're legally allowed to do. That's required by state law. In other words, a nurse practitioner can do more than someone who just has an RN license, but it's under the direct supervision of a physician. That physician is responsible for what a nurse practitioner does. That physician is a Columbia University person. That is the employer. And the record clearly stipulates that all of the employment issues are between Columbia and those nurse practitioners, not the hospital. And what the hospital's position was, we provided all the information about our employees, and that the information about Columbia employees, they have to demonstrate the relevance because there's a different standard applied in those cases, whether it's the Disneyland case or the Local 32B case. The other thing, which I think is important here, is this is one of the two-member board cases. And it seems to me that the board decision is not properly before this court. One, I think the Second Circuit's determination to dismiss with prejudice raises comedy issues and is binding. In any event, even if that wasn't the case, what the board did was adopt a void decision. The Supreme Court said its initial decision was void. All they did in this final decision was adopt the same thing. And in fact, they changed the footnotes after one of the board members left the board. And if you look carefully, two of the three board members would have deferred this case to arbitration. And yet, that didn't happen. And it seems to us that their argument that this issue is not properly raised is a real defiance of due process. That it was very clear that what the board did in these cases, and they decided 60 or 80 cases simultaneously, was not a substantive redecision. It took 8 days, 60 or 70 cases, all the same adoptions. That's not right. And we think just on the procedural grounds, the case has to be reversed.
What about your Section 8E argument?
That was full.
If they get the documents and it turns out that the Columbia nurse practitioners are doing bargaining unit work, then what?
What the union is seeking to do is to have them stop doing that work.
Right.
Okay. These are employees of another entity.
Right.
They're trying to exert their goal, as reclaimed by the union at the arbitration and by the board, is to have Columbia employees be barred from coming into the hospital. That's an object that's prohibited by 8B4 and 8E. This is not work acquisition, because Mr. Navarro testified that this work had never been done by hospital employees before. The hospital nurse practitioners have different jobs. And his testimony on behalf of the general counsel was that the nurse practitioners were doing physician work. They were making life easier for physicians. They were seeing patients. They were doing triage. They were doing physician work. That's not bargaining unit work. What the side letter in the contract refers to is not work by non-employees. It's not about subcontracting. It's that supervisors and other nurses not in the bargaining unit won't regularly do bargaining unit work. Contract is limited to nurses employed by the hospital. And I think that's the issue that the board did not look at.
All right.
I've reserved a couple minutes. Thank you.
Ms. Beard.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Heather Beard, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board, which is seeking enforcement of its order in this matter. The underlying legal issue in this case is straightforward. And I'd like to take off on something that my opponent was just doing when he was talking about the 8E section of this case, when he was talking about what work the nurse practitioners in the hospital were doing. That question as to what exact work they are doing is the question that the union is entitled to explore with its information request, regardless of whomever the technical employer is of these university nurse practitioners who have been seen in the hospital working in the units of nurse practitioners employed by the hospital. So I think that the key to the substantive issue of the 8A5 violation with the hospital not providing the information is that all of these issues that my opposing counsel is extrapolating as to what the hospital's position is vis-a-vis the employer of the nurse practitioners, that assertion by the hospital is something that the union is not bound to rely upon. And with this information request under broad standards of relevance that the board has upheld and the courts have upheld, the union is entitled to the information at this stage, the information request stage, to explore the viability of its grievance and to understand what folks are doing in their hospital units. So as far as the information request on the non-unit Columbia nurse practitioners, at this particular stage, the union has demonstrated the relevance of that information. And as Your Honor, Judge Henderson recognized, the language of the grievance request is not something that is binding, and there were many communications between the union and the hospital with regard to why the union was seeking the information. And even after the hospital told the union its position that it was not that it was contending these were not folks were not employed by the hospital, the union continued to explain to the hospital that what they were looking for is information about what duties these folks were doing in the facility. So I'd also like to go to the information regarding the shifts worked that was brought up by my opponent beginning, arguing that that information had been provided. Actually, the information with regard to the shifts work that the union requested had not been provided. And I believe in our brief, we cite the record testimony, which demonstrates that Murphy, who was the nurse practitioner and, in fact, the only testimony on this issue as to what was provided, because the hospital elected not to call anybody, she testified that this information was not provided to her. She did receive a lot of other information, and she also indicated that a lot of the information was not condensed. And we are not arguing that they needed to condense the information for her. Rather, we are arguing they needed to provide it. And the hospital did not provide the specific shifts worked for the unit employees in this matter. And that is a presumptively relevant standard that they needed to provide. The hospital's articulation of the shift differential as something that should have allowed the union to glean what shifts everybody had worked on, even in their reply brief, does not allege that all of that information had been provided for every nurse practitioner. So I think with the substantive matter of the information with regard to the unit employees and the non-unit employees who are performing work, the board made a reasonable decision based on substantial evidence that this information, request information, was something that the union was entitled to. I'd also like to go on and address the procedural arguments that were made by my opponent with regard to the two-member board. That's okay. The argument that my opposing counsel made was devoid of any case law or support for the notion that anything administratively that the National Labor Relations Board did in this case was improper. The standards by the Supreme Court, the circuit courts, are very clear that in the absence of any evidence of impropriety, there is no speculation that administrative officers have not fulfilled their duties. And in this particular case, we have the board that did exactly what would be expected of an administrative body to do after due deliberation, after adding a member to fulfill the constitution, the required quorum that the Supreme Court said, and issuing a decision. It's not the exact same decision, actually, as my opponent says. There is some commentary from Member Hayes, that is correct. And without any evidence whatsoever other than the fact that the board decided other cases after the two-member decision was addressed in its other case, there's nothing here to indicate there wasn't a proper adjudication by the board. So unless you have any further questions of me.
I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, why don't you take a minute?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I've never seen a situation before where the NLRB, on the day after they make a decision, when the case is pending before this court, files a petition to review in the Second Circuit, even before the hospital got notice of that decision. That's not normal procedure. Board's case handling manual requires the board to normally attempt to get voluntary compliance. It was very clear to me that the board didn't want to come back to this court. So they take the case back from this court. 8 days later, they one of 60 decisions, and the next morning, they're in the Second Circuit. We filed a petition there saying, that's not right. And the Second Circuit dismissed that petition with prejudice. More to what they did, this, you've seen the record in this case. It's inconceivable that 60 cases were given due deliberation by all panel members in 8 days. And that's what the board did here. And two of the three deciding members wrote footnotes, one in the void decision and one in this decision, that said they would have deferred this case to arbitration pursuant to the board's process. The fact that two out of three members agreed on doing that, but didn't do that, says they didn't talk to each other. And by the time the board corrected the decision, one of the two members wasn't on the board anymore. So this was not truly a three-member panel. And I think what the Supreme Court said in reversing the two-member board case was that the board had to go back and do a proper decision-making. And we respectfully submit the record here shows that didn't happen.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.